On today's episode of Work Trends, we're getting real about company culture with Charlie Judy. Welcome to the Work Trends podcast from Talent Culture. I'm your host, Megan Mbiro. Every week, I interview interesting people and brands who are reimagining work. For more information, be sure to check us out at talentculture.com and join us live on Twitter every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern using the hashtag WorkTrends. Today's guest is Charlie Judy. He helps leaders rethink company culture, starting with understanding their own organization's cultures before they start looking for ideas at other companies. Welcome to WorkTrends, Charlie. It's been a couple of years since you and I connected.
I know, and I don't know that we're better people for that. Thank you so much for inviting me to be part of this, and I'm thrilled to reconnect.
And I'm thrilled you don't go by Charles, because that would be really uncool.
You know what? Even my mother doesn't call me Charles when she's angry at me. I don't know. It is on my birth certificate, however.
Okay, so let's start with something that I think a lot of people talk about, company culture awards. Every leader wants to land on the best place to work list or be featured for having a cool coffee or a cool office. But you say none of that matters. Explain this to our listeners.
Yeah, so this is, this is something that I think organizations struggle with. And have struggled with. I think it's a bit of a paradigm. And frankly, I think we've been a little bit brainwashed to think that one can really define what a quote unquote best workplace is all about. We think if we can start understanding culture, workplace culture at a different level, we can start dispensing or disposing of these binary terms that we've historically used to describe the workplace, and which are terribly limiting, and not to mention very, very, very relative. Like so, what's best for you, Megan, is not what's best for me necessarily. And yet we say this is a best place to work. Best place for who? I have worked with any number of organizations that have been on those best places to work lists. And I can tell you that they were not best for me. Here's why. There are certain behaviors, there are certain actions, there are certain ways that work gets done that are really, really important to me. In fact, they are so important that if they don't exist, kind of all bets are off for me in my experience with that organization. Those behaviors, how we act and how we interact and how we get work done, that's culture. That's not about how I feel about work. It's about how we work. And we lose sight of that, or we don't even pay attention to it.
It's just become a buzzword. And I think you and I, you know, we grew up in social media together. You and I go way back, Charlie. And, you know, with all this buzz about culture, you're right. Most people cannot describe what their organization is in a couple of words. And that's the real test, isn't it? Like, how can you describe it? And hopefully it's unique and different from the way that somebody else talks about it.
It's no different if I ask you to tell me about yourself. You know, nobody knows yourself better than yourself, right? But you will invariably use words that everybody else uses. And that's not really fair to you. That doesn't really do yourself justice. It doesn't give us the context and the color to understand at a very kind of intimate way, in a very intimate way, who you really are. It's 10 times more challenging to do that when somebody asks you to tell me about the organization. Tell me about what it was really like to work there. Well, you know, we use words like, we have a lot of fun and we collaborate and we innovate. And that's cool. Like those words are good words and they mean something interesting, but they mean something different as well to every single person. How can you help somebody understand what innovation really looks like and feels like and sounds like in your organization? that's where that kind of cultural clarity really comes into play. Like getting it down to that context, that root level, so that I can help you envision what does innovation really mean to us? That's culture.
So how can people do this? Like you've started us off and I think, yes, dot, 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 but what else? Like, what are the action steps for you and I and everybody here that's listening? What can we do today to stop all this madness with buzzwords and actually put something into place that feels like it matters to me or to you or to us?
Yeah. So first of all, data. Like, I mean, I know this is cliche and this in and of itself is becoming a buzzword, but I think it's becoming increasingly important. We have got to stop making assumptions about who we are and how we work. We have, you know, people analytics and in my estimation, culture fueled people analytics are an important first step to doing anything meaningful and actionable in the workplace. So what does that mean? Well, it means a lot of things, but first of all, it means that we've got to stop measuring outcomes. I mean, outcomes are important. It's good for us to have a benchmark.
I was just going to say, like, did you just say that?
Yeah, I did. I mean, we need the benchmark and like it or not, the widely accepted benchmark for the world of work for the last two decades at least is employee engagement. Employee engagement is a great tool. It's an interesting science. It's a good measure. But dress it up as much as you want to, it is still a measure of employee sentiment. How do employees feel about work? That tells us something. But what's behind that sentiment is a whole lot of variables and information and details and experiences. And unless we're getting information about those drivers, not the outcome, but the drivers, then we can't really start getting real about culture or about telling the story like we need to tell it, or about owning even who we are. That's the other thing, is that we get so focused on those outcomes, like, man, we were 75 last year in employee engagement, and now we're a 74? Oh, no. Like, what is that? Who cares? Like, what? Okay, fine, but what does that mean? Like, what does that really translate into for us? If we can stop worrying about those things, if we can stop having those conversations, and we can just start owning who we are, like, this is who we are, then you can start having conversations about, is this who we need to be? Is this who we need to be in order to drive success?
True.
This is why you can't go and pay attention necessarily, or at least put a lot of value in necessarily, what other people are doing or what other organizations are doing. Because what drives that organization's success is not necessarily what drives your organization's success.
I love this. And I think this relates to people too, right? It relates to the self and not comparing ourselves. These lists that we're all on, whether it's, you know, I'm on the top influencer list this week for Future of Work, right?
Right.
Or you were on that last week, Charlie, or to your point, this whole, like, are you on the best place to work list? I think it's a very scary place to be. I think you're right. I think we have to be careful here. We have data now, and we can be smarter about this, and we can be more real. I think it's more genuine to say that everyone's unique, and I know it's a lot more work to put into it. So talk to us a little bit about this whole understanding of, you know, what somebody's culture is, and why that's so important. I know we've touched upon it, but I'd want to hear a little bit more about that from you.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like it has to get down to the behavioral level. Like, so we need to be able to describe how we get stuff done. And so, you know, let's just take a real example, you know, so we can say that we collaborate and collaboration is important to us, and that's cool, but we have to understand if collaboration means that we all get in a room together and we don't leave that room until we agree on a decision and then we move forward, or if it means we just make sure that the right people get the right information at the right time, and we're really good at making sure that that information is transferred and transmitted in a very fluid way. Or if it means, you know what, we're really good at removing borders and barriers and territories so that you can work with whomever you need to, whenever you need to. Collaboration can mean a lot of things, but you've got to be able to describe it at that behavioral level. And so go out and measure the behaviors. Go out and understand what those behaviors are. We use the term building blocks all the time. What are the building blocks to collaboration for you? How do you know collaboration is happening in your organization? Do you know it's happening because people are no longer asking questions about what information they need or who they need it from, and it's just happening, you know? Or do you know collaboration is happening because the doors are closed and everybody's having a good meeting? You know, it doesn't matter as long as you understand what it looks like for you and that happens all the time.
I know you're super busy right now, and I know you're judging something we call the Employee Engagement Awards. Talk to us a little bit about what companies are competing for, what kinds of awards, and what we can do as leaders or employees to learn from this.
Yeah, so the Employee Engagement Awards, which I guess I'm in my second year of judging, there are so many categories that I can't even list them on this podcast. We'd need like another 20 minutes to do so.
Right.
But you know, the which is by the way, one of the reasons I like this this program, because there are lots of ways to engage employees, right? And you can do that in the way that you learn and develop and give people skills that they had before they got there. You can do that in the way that you create and innovate and so on and so forth. But again, it speaks to this idea that there is no one recipe. There is no, you know, formula for employee engagement. It is about understanding what your business needs in order to be successful, and then creating the environment, the culture that reinforces and clarifies that at every turn. And so I think what organizations have to learn from this kind of program, again, which is multidimensional, has different layers, is dynamic, doesn't have this kind of one size fits all like application. Everybody's got to check these boxes first. You got to take a survey and you've got to get a certain score and then you've got to be compared to everybody. That's not how it works. It's a much more qualitative exercise. It's why we have a panel of judges. Like, we literally read these applications that describe, like, what are we doing to pay attention to the unique and distinct needs of our organization and then responding to those in a way that matter to us. Not to everybody else, but in a way that matters to us. I think organizations need to learn how to do that for themselves. It's the kind of teach you to fish thing. Mm-hmm. Then I think they need to spend time copying what other people are doing. That's why I like this program.
So you and I go way back, and I don't think I've ever asked you this question, but how did you get interested in company culture? Like, when did that happen for you?
Well, I mean, I spent 25 years or close to 25 years as an HR exec. I really struggled with this. I struggled with data and lack thereof. And I think, you know, the lip service that we have collectively been paying this thing called culture. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, if I just had to nail this to the wall, I would say it's about lip service, man. Like, I get so sick mm-hmm. of organizations standing up there and saying, oh, culture is so important to us and our people are so right. important. I mean, of course, like, we all feel that. Like, no, I don't have to convince anybody who's listening to this podcast that culture is important. Like, that's a no-brainer. But saying it's important and then actually intentionally managing your culture, mm-hmm. just as you would any other operating system in your business, those are two different things. And I had trouble finding organizations that were willing to manage their cultures like any other operating system in their business. And it was one of the reasons I finally had to pull the ripcord on corporate America. Like, I had to go figure out a way to fix this. Like, let's not to say that I'm going to fix the world, but people need to be challenging lip service. Challenge lip service, people. Like, challenge lip service at every turn.
I want to say, if you're listening right now to Work Trends, share your thoughts with us on Twitter or wherever you like to hang out on social. Help us stop the madness around lip service, because I completely agree with today's guest. Enough.
Enough.
Show us some action. Show us behaviors. Give me more. I want more. I want to solve this. And I agree with you. I think that's so important that you're doing this now, and I'm happy for you. You seem like it's a great fit. And that's what everybody wants right now, ultimately, is to feel like they're in something where they wake up every morning and they're affecting change, you know, and we need a lot more of that. I know you work with a lot of leaders on measuring and understanding their culture. What have you learned recently from some of these clients that you're working with?
Yeah, so the most meaningful measure of whether an organization kind of gets this is the willingness to work at this every day. And we see huge, huge strides with organizations that do a couple of things. One, they create stewardship for their culture. So this is not about leadership owning culture. This is not about the CEO sets the tone. It's about, you know what, we all own this. And in order for us to kind of continue to manage in a really productive way our own cultures, we've got to assign some responsibility for this. We've got to share that responsibility. We've got to be vocal about it. We've got to be visible with it. And we've got to hold ourselves accountable to it. And that is not a finite project. It is an indefinite project. We will continuously do this, forever do this, because it is part of managing our business. And so, organizations that say, you 10 people from across the organization, different levels, different functions, different backgrounds, different tenure, you are our culture team. Like, you are the stewards to culture, and you're not going to do all the work, but you're going to keep us on the path. And you're going to keep us, you know, focused and make sure that we're delivering and make sure that we're demonstrating that we're really serious about this. And you're going to be out there doing the work, you know, waving the flag. Sorry, long answer. But I think what we're learning, or what we're seeing, is that organizations that kind of say, you guys are charged with this thing, they're the ones that are making a difference.
I'm thinking you're kind of bullish on people analytics. Is this true?
Big time, man. Big time.
I'm feeling it. I really am.
I think people analytics, it's, you know, and that's another thing that we've got to change our paradigms on. You know, people analytics does not mean your human capital management system. It does not mean your HRIS. It does not mean tell me who we have and what comprises that workforce. People analytics is about understanding how people work. That's behavioral stuff. It's deep, it's emotional, it's psychological. Mm-hmm. We're talking about complex entities here, complex individuals. And, you know, I think AI is going to go a long way in helping us. But I also think that we got to get real about what we know today, and we got to get better at paying attention to what's actually happening on the ground.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
I talked to somebody interestingly yesterday about kind of analytics, and they kept wanting to say, well, what other things should we have in our dashboard? You know, like turnover, mm-hmm. and all. And I kept saying, you know, those things are really important. Like, you need to have a gauge on that. But again, those are like, well, those are dashboard things, right? They're like speed gauges or dials, or, mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to see how they go up or down. But can you tell me, as a result of looking at that, why they're going up or down? That's what we need to get better at doing with people analytics. We need to get better at leading indicators, not lagging indicators. We need to get better at anticipating what this organization needs 3 years from now, not yesterday. I mean, we've got to go deeper than what shows up on a dashboard.
And we got to be about people first. I mean, I think to your point, so often we try to kind of put that veil over the people somehow and are like, ooh, this is really cool and, you know, new and shiny and it's like it doesn't really matter. All of that in the world is not going to make you a better leader or having a culture where people actually want to stay and talk about it. I mean, that's the rub. Speaking of all this fancy analytics stuff, let's talk a little bit about the future. How do you predict work is going to change, say, in the next 5 years?
Obviously it's changing every day. In fact, we spend a lot of time trying to understand kind of where the puck is headed. Sorry, that's a cliche. I just cannot avoid.
I know. I was like, you went there.
I did. But you know what? It is what it's about. Like, you know, we can't all be the future of work, but we have to pay attention very much to where the future of work is headed because it tells us something about who we could be. And it doesn't mean, by the way, that we all have to get there tomorrow or that we all will get there tomorrow, but we have to be paying attention to how, you know, those organizations that are kind of on the leading edge of busting the traditional paradigms of work, like what are they doing and how are they doing it? Mm-hmm. So I think the future of work has a lot to do with busting those traditional paradigms, like really blowing them up.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, like you said it a little bit earlier, like, did you really just say that? Yeah, I really just said that. Like, mm-hmm. like I think we're going to say, I think we're going to say things like, you know what? I don't care how happy my employees are. I really don't. I care about whether or not they're behaving the way that I need them to behave to drive success. Right. Like, and if you ain't happy with that, then you're not in the right organization.
Right.
I love it. I mean, I know your listeners are probably on two sides of the fence around things like Amazon and Bezos, and you know, we're all going to be working for Amazon, whatever. But a great example of these traditional paradigms being busted, they caught so much flack about a year ago around the hardcore cutthroat environment society that they'd created and culture, et cetera. Everybody was beating them up on it. And he said, you know what? Guys, this is who we are. Like, this is what works for us. And it's not for everybody. That's cool.
Yep.
But we are not trying to be somebody that everybody wants us to be. We're trying to be who we need to be. Like, I think we're going to see that in the future. We're going to see organizations standing up and saying, this is who we are. This is what works for us. You need to understand everything that you possibly can about it so that you can make a better decision about whether or not you're going to be successful here.
The sad truth, though, is that a lot of these organizations ain't that fun to work at.
Nope.
There's a reason why they're so successful. So I think this is, you know, this is dangerous territory we're talking about, right? If you really uncover this veil and you look at Facebook and you look at Google and you look at a lot of these organizations, I just wonder what's really happening there. Interesting. You know, if we really peel this all back.
I think you're raising the operative point here, and that is, if you're looking for a place that's fun,
mm-hmm.
then that's a fleeting and maybe unattainable aspiration. Like, I mean, yep. fun comes in lots of different ways, but I know it's dangerous territory, but I think that we've got to be willing to recognize the workplace is something more than about having fun. It needs to be.
Yeah. It's about getting real, and whatever that real is for you, that's real. It is what it is, you know?
And by the way, I can find many people, as can Amazon, as can Google, as can Facebook, who are willing to say, you know what? I get it. Like, this is probably going to kill me.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to do that because I'm going to get X, Y, or Z, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be able to. And right now in my life, X, Y, and Z are really, really important to me.
Right.
They may not be 5 years from now or 10 years from now, or as I'm approaching the twilight of my career, I probably don't want to go work for Amazon when I'm ready to go find a beach to sit on. Like, that's cool. But knowing what you're getting That's the important, you have to understand what you're getting yourself into, and organizations have to be a lot more open, authentic, transparent about what that is so that we can all make better decisions about it. And I'm here to tell you that that is all about understanding your culture, talking about it in a way that makes a difference and that people can identify with, and getting real about it.
Talk about getting real. You've actually been in the space as an HR practitioner for more than 20 gazillion years, everyone, and you're still here, right? Telling the story. How do you think this experience has helped you at the company you're running now, basically? Talk to us about what you're up to with WorkXO.
Yeah, so I mean, WorkXO is continuing to pursue what it really means to manage culture, and I think my years in the trenches helped me understand this whole thing around the difference between saying it's important and showing it's important, and I think that it taught me something about how challenging and difficult it really is for internal teams to move the needle on something that is complex as culture. You know, I mean, I'm not here to say that any organization doesn't have the best of intentions. Everyone does, right? I mean, we all enter the, there are very few organizations out there that don't want to do the right thing, but it's complex. It takes diligence, and it takes effort, it takes energy, and it takes resources and vigilance. I think all of that has helped us think differently about our product, that it has to go beyond data, that it has to go beyond recommendations, and that where the rubber hits the road. That's what
there
I
was looking
for. Where the rubber hits the road is when you actually start doing something with that data. You know, we found that close to 50%, it's like 43% of organizations say that they rarely, if ever, do anything meaningful with the results of their employee surveys.
Ouch. I mean, and you know what? I feel like that number might not even, like, ouch at 40%, but it could be even worse, right?
Well, yeah, 20%
if we
people
start
are lying.
Looking around, yeah, exactly. If we start digging around there, I'm kind of scared what we're going to find.
I mean, we spend $1 billion a year on employee surveys. I mean, that means like we're wasting close to $500 million a year for what? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, so it's what I've learned after being in the trenches is that you've got to take that next step big time.
Well, you know, I'm so happy that you took the next step in your career. And I know you've always got helpful thoughts on balance. So listen, tell us, you're running a busy startup. I know you're also a dad. I mean, how are you prioritizing everything that has to get done for you?
Jeez.
And your family and your business and your friends, like, how is that working?
Man, it's tough. It's hard. I don't have any good answers for you. This whole thing, I don't draw lines around work and play and family. Those things are completely integrated for me. I get up in the middle of the day and I go hang out with my kids for a while, you know, and I do that when they're there or they're downstairs and they're on spring break right now. And so when I'm done with a meeting, when I hang up on this, I'll go hang out with them just because I can. Right. And it's not about like 9 to 5 anymore for me. It's 24/7. That doesn't work for everybody. I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing, and I use, you know, tools and technologies to help me do that. I'm really big on project management and using some of those tools. You just got to kind of look at this entire thing as your existence. It's hard to draw borders around your life and your work anymore.
So entirely true. And I feel the same way. And I think more and more people are moving in this direction. You know, it's like you wake up and you go, guess what? I'm in charge of my own career.
Yep.
Hey, listen, thanks for stopping by. It was so great catching up with you.
It's my pleasure. It's a lot of fun, and I will look forward to more of it.
Thanks for listening to Work Trends from Talent Culture. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'd be really grateful if you took a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find our show. If you know someone who would enjoy listening, please share it with them. You can learn more about the future of work at talentculture.com.